it's time for a bonus. A bonus episode. I love episodes of theater. We're going off the beaten path.
Off the beaten path.
We're off.
Hey friends, this is Bailey. Thanks for joining us for another bonus episode. This is an artist spotlight of Ben Morosky. He is one of our nominees for the Best Playwright at the 2022 Hollywood Fringe Festival, but we recorded this episode a long time ago, so I just wanted to let you know that something pretty amazing has happened since this recording. Ben was actually nominated for 2 Los Angeles Drama Critics Circles. This just came out about a week ago. He's nominated for Best Solo Performance up against the likes of Mike Birbiglia and Holland Taylor. And he's also up for Best Writer up against The Inheritance by Matthew Lopez. So we wanted to let you know that. Congrats to Ben, and please enjoy this interview that happened about 6 months ago. You'll definitely want to keep an eye out for Ben. He's an exciting artist on the rise. Enjoy the interview.
Theater. To be or not to be. Theater. The play's the thing.
Hey, everybody. This is always fun. This is different. This is different
fall,
for us.
Everybody. And Rosh Hashanah.
I know. We got a lot going on this week. You know, equinoxes and changing this. I noticed the other night that it got way darker way faster than I thought it would, like doing my evening walks. And yeah. I was like, what's happening? But then we don't do the daylight savings switch thing.
Aren't
till
we?
November.
We do in November.
November,
yeah.
But it's a ways away. Like normally it feels like it's an October thing for me.
I do remember a couple months ago they were trying to change that in Congress, and it was like the only thing almost everyone agreed on.
Yeah.
But they still couldn't agree to get rid of it or keep it.
There was just enough, like, you know, interest in it that people were like, well, I don't know. It seems dumb to me.
It's a stupid thing to talk about in Congress.
Time is a construct, man. Light and dark is not. Yeah. Shit.
Well, Congress is theater.
Right.
Well, and on that note.
Welcome
to Theater, the theater podcast for theater people made by 3 theater nerds from the LA theater scene. I'm CJ Merriman.
And I'm Scott Leggett. Now, normally Bailey would be with us and we would be doing a show where we talked about the evolution of the great playwrights. But today we have a very special artist spotlight. It's a bonus series highlighting an artist that you should be keeping an eye out for. And one of our excellent nominees for the first ever Theater Playwright Award at the 2022 Hollywood Fringe Festival. Please welcome Ben Morosky. Welcome, sir.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Oh, man, it's a thrill. And I'm really excited to talk about your work. Ben is an award-winning playwright, actor, screenwriter, and filmmaker. His plays include festival hits This Vicious Minute, The Wake, Tilt, and Dog. I've seen three of those. And his forthcoming short film, Tilt, is adapted from his play of the same name. So welcome.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks. I'm happy to be here.
We're so stoked to have you. Now, listen, y'all, we're connoisseurs of context on this pod. So, Ben, could you give us a little background on yourself, where you come from, all that good stuff?
Yeah, I'm originally from Northern California, from outside Sacramento, Davis specifically, born and raised.
Right on.
And stayed in Davis went to high school and went to UC Davis, got my degree in English, with a creative writing emphasis at Davis, and then got out of town.
Then started the adventures, right?
That was like me with the Midwest. Right. I stayed there through college, and I got out of there.
I got out of a lot of places very quickly throughout my life. I was an Air Force brat, so I was just like all over the place. But I've been here longer than I've been anywhere in my entire life in Los Angeles. Yeah,
Yeah. I think I've got 2 years left, and then I will have split it in half between Midwest and Los Angeles. So.
Right on.
It's very, I mean, it is home, but it's very nearly, like, technically home, too.
Yeah, totally.
Ben, how did you come to theater and writing?
You know, I've always loved words ever since I was a little kid. And I've always been writing since I was young. Theater was definitely, like, a bit of an escape for me. I grew up in a very restrictive religious environment. Grew up in a cult. Yes, theater was one of those. Reading and writing and theater became escapes that were, like, allowed, you know? So it was, so I first got hooked into theater in, like, drama class in middle school when it was the church school. And then got hooked into a summer Shakespeare company in another town nearby Davis, and that was my first foray into theater outside of the cult.
Right.
So it was definitely an escape. For me.
So the theater you were doing pre-Shakespeare theater, was it all religious stuff that you were doing, or did you guys branch out and do other works?
It was essentially, like, religious stuff. So that was interesting.
Wow. That's
fascinating.
But it was my first time sort of doing stuff for an audience, you know, a quite literally a captive audience.
right.
Oh my God.
Wow.
So there were big houses.
Yeah. You were getting the feed. You were getting you were getting your fix on it. Sure. Yeah. What was this? I guess a two-part question. You've kind of answered it already, but do you remember what was the first play that you did as an actor that, like, you felt it, like you knew that this was something you wanted to keep doing?
This was a couple years after that, but I played one of the lead roles in Bus Stop by William Inge.
Sure. Yeah.
And that was sort of it was the biggest role I'd had in what was as close to contemporary theater that I had done. So it felt very real and very natural. I love Shakespeare, but there's a barrier of entry, you know?
Sure, absolutely.
It takes some time to get into it.
Yeah. No, and Inge, too, you know, you're talking about, you know, a playwright and a group of actors that originally did that, that realism and that groundedness was part of the whole process anyway. And I think that's one of the things that's kind of endured about Inge, so that you could get into real, like, connected human-on-human stuff in that show.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And then what was the first play you ever wrote?
That's a great question. I was writing a long way back, you know, and I wrote one play that was actually when I was still in the cult that I grew up in. I wrote a play for them that was about, every year they did stuff about, like, the Christian Reformation, like, different figures in the Reformation.
Oh, sure. Wow.
So I got tasked with, they allowed me to write a play, and I chose, like, kind of an obscure figure. I forget who it was, but someone who had dealt with, like, mental health stuff. Huh. And so I wrote this kind of, like, very interesting play that went very underappreciated, but it was good. And then I started writing in earnest plays in college. I had some good, there were some in the creative writing department, in the English department. Actually, it was through the theater department. I, like, moonlighted in the theater department at Davis. Because I wasn't really a part of it, but I did some plays because auditions were open to non-theater majors and minors.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so were the classes. So I took the playwriting workshops, and we had some good, like, visiting artists. Philip Congatanda was the visiting artist. He's a playwright who's does a lot of work in the Bay Area.
Okay, right on.
And has had some stuff done at East West Players down here.
Okay, cool.
So he became a mentor of mine. And I wrote a couple plays through those workshops.
Right on, right on.
That were not performed, but we did some like readings of them, which was super gratifying because it was that first time kind of like hearing my words performed by actors,
right?
Which is another sort of like threshold to cross.
Yeah,
letting go of a baby in a sense. Yeah,
yeah, letting go of a baby, and by the same token, kind of like, you know, hearing that baby, you know,
right?
Yeah,
cry.
Absolutely.
I mean, I know that was a while back, but is there any thought of maybe revisiting those and revamping them and then putting them up for a live performance?
My sister always wants me to revisit this one that I wrote called Waffle Iron. that was definitely very much a, I was in my deeply steeped in my Martin McDonagh phase.
Right.
So it's right heavily on. Influenced by his stuff. But yeah, not really. I look back at maybe one of them that I wrote a little later, but yeah, they're more just kind of like interesting touchstones to look back at for the most part. Yeah.
Part of your growth and development.
Yeah,
do you feel like
finding my voice? Because I don't know that I had found my. I think my voice was sort of like marbled throughout, but like not really the full steak, you know?
Right.
Sure.
So do you when you look back at those, or if you know find them on your hard drive or something like that, do you find yourself connected to those still? Or is it just, it was just, again, a stepping stone kind of thing?
I think I find myself connected to them because they are stepping stones, you know, because I wouldn't really have the, you know, voice that I think I've developed without having written them. And I can definitely see the themes that I still write about are sort of there already.
Right. Okay.
In those plays.
Right on.
It's kind of like going back and reading old journals, which are stacked up on my bookshelf. You know, actually, I'm scared to read my old journals.
Yeah, it's definitely a scary proposition.
What was going on that day? Like, oh my God. Yeah, no, I've done that. I've had a series of journals, and I have one in particular that it was a gift from my grandmother, and it happened right before she passed, and it's this cool leather-bound snap thing. But I've only used it specifically for funny writing, like when I'm like, not necessarily working out jokes, but working out like funny ideas.
Yeah.
I don't like, but I still tended to go heavy with that. And that's only because my grandmother had this insane laugh. Like, so every time I think about my humor, it's rooted to her. I remember showing her like Monty Python's Life of Brian when she was probably in her late 70s. And I've never seen a human being laugh or cackle as hard as hers, you know. But anyway, digression, which is one of our sub themes on this podcast.
One of our many sub themes.
This next question is yours, CJ, and it's a really great one. Yeah.
Well, I kind of, before we got into that, since we've been talking about your writing, I want to specifically talk about Dog, which was our nominee for this year. I was so excited when I saw you had a show in Fringe this year because, I mean, I haven't seen your work since 2016 when you did Tilt. Were one of these other scripts in between Tilt and Dog?
Tilt is the last play that I wrote.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
So I knew it was going to be good. Like, we even told Bailey because we both had seen Tilt. And when we saw your entry into the Fringe this year, we were like, Bailey, we gotta go see it. Whether you would have signed up for the award or not, we would have been like, we gotta go see it.
Right. Absolutely.
But I wanted to talk about it and have you tell us more about it, please.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Where was the beginning of that? What was the seed?
You know, it's the play is fiction, but it's sort of studded with factual nuggets. Mm-hmm. And
clear, like that's very clear. Like it's clear that it's very personal. Like it felt like you were connected through that whole thing. I'm sorry to interrupt, but
no, not at all. I guess it mainly started with two things. I've always wanted to write. I grew up in a football family. My dad's a coach. He's a college football coach.
Right on.
He played professionally.
That's hard.
And so it's, I'm from like a big sports family.
Right.
And I've always wanted to write something about football because I feel like there's a lot there.
While
it's not necessarily approached so much, sports don't tend to be approached from like a literary, you know, perspective as much. So I've always wanted to put my two cents, you know, throw my hat in the ring and put my perspective out there. And then also, more specifically, I quit drinking 6 months ago.
Oh, wow.
Good for you.
Thanks. And dog is kind of like a, you know, you both saw it. It's a reckoning with, alcoholism, to a certain degree,
sure.
Or a relationship with alcohol. And I had the apartment that my girlfriend and I were last living in had a very narrow balcony, and one of my like my nightmare scenario that I like would play in my head for no real reason other than I don't know why is
intrusive thoughts. We all get them.
Intrusive thoughts, tripping on the balcony and like sending your dog over the edge by accident. So
I know I wrote this in my review, but I came out of that like there's things I can relate to in that there have been times in my life when I've been going too hard on alcohol and just kind of having to that the whole I mean, it starts off right at the top when you're talking about lights up, lights down. And whenever the lights come up, the hangover that I could see written all over your face, I'm like, I've been there. I've woken up and I've been like, what the fuck happened? And then the shame spiral and then everything that comes after that. But I think I wrote it in my review that I wanted this to be required watching for every guy I went to high school with. Because now they're all adults still living in the middle of nowhere in the US and they're still doing that all the time. And you know, when we were in high school, I was a goody two shoes. I was incredibly Christian and didn't touch alcohol till I got like to the latter part of college. But like,
yeah, likewise.
I just remembered those guys and I grew up with them and I still vaguely know some of them and they haven't changed one bit.
Well,
that's super interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'm really, the idea of sort of exploring football and masculinity and that culture. I played in high school in the Deep South where football is faith. Like I remember the coach telling us to go kick ass for Jesus. And being kind of like not like I was raised distinctly agnostic, so I was kind of like, well, okay, like I guess,
sure.
But also just sort of and the thing that affected me the most, both about the play and your performance of the play, and I want to talk about are those things mutually exclusive for you in a second, but was your vulnerability and. The honesty that you sort of just stood tall and told your truth, you know, through this story. And it was beautiful to watch and very affecting.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that we talk about frequently on the podcast and off is CJ's sort of, you know, rallying cry is everybody just needs to get therapy. Like everybody just needs to go and deal with their shit. And you were dealing with your shit and I just fascinated by that origin of it and that element of masculinity where I think, you know, it's so obvious that we as men don't have that opportunity to vent those things. And I'm talking about people, not artists. I'm talking about men and that you did it in such a tight, wonderful fashion and bold fashion really knocked me out. And so thank you for sharing. Thank you for... Wow. Being an artist like that, that's what it's all about, I think.
Well, thanks.
It was my favorite. The other thing I loved about it, too, is I always make the joke of, like, you know, big budget stuff and how much money people want to spend on theater. And theater's only good if you spend all of God's money. And you were in our smallest space at the Broadwater, which is, what, 25, 30 seats if it's packed?
Yeah.
Yeah, 28.
And yeah, and it's a small little space. You had a big cooler in the middle and just white lights, and that was it. And the show was still fucking great, and we were all with you from top to bottom.
Oh, it was electrifying.
And I'm always like, that is my favorite kind of theater, where it's like,
cool.
There aren't a shit ton of bells and whistles. It's just your guts on the stage and a really good script and a really good actor.
Well, and then I also was working at the Broadwater at the time. So it was a real trip after seeing the show to watch audiences walk out the door and watch how they were affected and watch, like, just people literally kind of go, whew, okay. Like, because, again, the tightness of it, because what was the runtime? 35, 40 minutes?
It was closer to an hour.
Really? Yeah. It didn't feel like an hour. Like, you're
between,
you
know, like 55 or 57.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. Wow. That's another
testament. Because I definitely went to 1 hour shows that felt
like nine.
Yeah, so did I.
You know,
see a lot
everybody's
of stuff
trying.
At Fringe?
I wanted to see more. I just have a. I haven't done a solo. I hadn't done a solo play since 2014, and I've gotten a lot more nervous in the intervening 8 years. So,
I understand.
Yeah.
So I have a hard time seeing stuff the same day I perform, and then like feeling like need to rehearse before that, you know, the days before that. So
I could only go to stuff after performances for me.
Yeah, so. Exactly.
Yeah, no, I totally identify. Like if I have a show, then that's what the day is about for me. Like whatever I can do to keep the world at bay while I focus in. But I'd like to get back real quick, because you perform all of your shows or the ones I've seen. So are those two things separate for you, or are they two phases of a single process for you? I would imagine with Dog that was so personal that you, would you ever want to see somebody else do it?
I mean, yeah, I could see someone else performing Dog.
Okay.
Yeah, but it was definitely like, I mean, the main reason I perform the stuff that I write, partially because it's personal and partially because so hard to come by opportunities, you know.
Sure. Yeah, you got to make your own. Hell
Dax,
yeah.
So I just make my own.
Yeah. That was cool. I'm so glad you did. And who directed it?
His name's Jordan Lane Chappell.
Oh, that's right. I met Jordan. Yeah.
Chappelle, sorry.
But yeah, it was again so wonderful to see. That's theater. Like CJ was right. Like that's what theater should be. It should be somebody standing there, telling you, being as honest and as vulnerable as possible, and affecting you. And so
And honestly, large credit to Jordan as far as the show being what it is, because it reads. Well, I'm biased, but it reads well.
It does read well. Like,
but
it did.
A different animal. It's a different animal on stage, and that the staging is largely due to his influence, which I'm deeply indebted to. So,
Well, and I thought it had. I mean, which was the writing, but I mean, also it was the directing. I mean, even though, again, like we keep talking about how you put yourself up there and you were honest and you were vulnerable and all that stuff, it was well broken up with moments where it was, if it was dark humor or when the song came on and you were dancing around and lip syncing the song and stuff, there were these little flashes that everyone could take a breath and kind of laugh at something for a minute. And
yeah,
so it was
good.
Really well paced that way.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. It's definitely one of the funnier things that I've written. So,
oh yeah.
Yeah.
Which wasn't really my intention. It just sort of shook out that way. I think I was just trying to be as honest as I could to who this person, this character.
Right.
Sure.
And a lot of that shook out as some, you know, some if not dark, then, you know, some sense of humor.
Absolutely.
Well, sometimes you got to laugh or you're going to cry the whole time.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
And then just little touches, the specificity of the sunglasses, the blades. Yeah. It was like I knew who that guy was, like from that first second. It's like, you know, and not in any kind of derogatory way. I just knew who that dude was. Did I read in your bio you spent some time at Williamstown?
I did. Yeah, I was an apprentice there in
Oh,
2009.
Oh, right on. How was that
Yeah.
experience? And was that specifically for acting?
It was the acting apprentice company. Yeah. I
Okay.
mean, which basically amounts to like a little bit of acting and a lot of grunt work.
Yeah. Yes. I've
But
heard of
it was great. It was, yeah, a very influential summer in my life.
Oh, right on. Right on.
Yeah.
That was cool. That kind of stood out. I had a few friends who've gone through that over the
Yeah.
years, and all of them were like, yep, I loved every minute of it.
Yeah.
Even lugging the lumber
Yeah,
and doing all
working
that stuff.
overnight and doing
Yeah. You know, hell
set
yeah.
changes. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Before we move on, were there any final things that we wanted to say about dog that you want to say about dog, Ben?
It's a good question. I don't think so. I think I just yeah, I'm happy that the draft came together when it did, and that I got to do it at the festival. I just think the Hollywood Fringe is such a great avenue to explore new work.
Yeah.
And you know, that cuts a lot of different ways, but it doesn't change the fact that it's a great avenue
Right.
for new work.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's a place where you can take risks. I
I
had a
call it
pro
Second Christmas. I love Hollywood Fringe.
I love it. I had a professor who really instilled in me the idea of glorious failure. Of reaching for that brass ring and failing and falling on your face and what you can learn and glean from that. And
Yeah,
that,
and to be
go
honest
ahead.
with you, I had no. I told this to Jordan. I told this to my girlfriend. I was like, I told my mom. I was like, I have no idea how this play is going to be received. I don't know if it's going to be. I don't know if it's quite literally going to be sound and fury signifying nothing,
Right, right.
or if it's
Right.
going to land. And pleasant surprise was that it landed, which was very,
Totally.
very gratifying, given the fact that it was so, you know, while it's fictional, is such a personal piece. Not just on the alcohol front, but on the just being from a sports family and like that feeling, kind of feeling protective of that, because I feel like a lot of times that's like written off as like the sort of like uncultured end of
Oh, they're just a bunch of
things.
jocks.
Yeah,
Like, yeah.
no, that, yeah, some of the
So,
smartest people I've ever known were football coaches, like
yeah.
literally. So, yeah,
So it's fun to
absolutely.
sort of throw my hat into that arena and give something, you know, literary and poetic to sports and football specifically.
Yeah,
I
right on.
definitely didn't see anything like it at Fringe too, so it stood
Oh,
out.
thanks.
Yeah,
Yeah.
yeah.
Who's your favorite sports team? Who do you root for?
Well,
What
growing
football
up in
team?
Northern California, I was we were a 49ers household.
Sure, sure. Plus
So yeah.
those were good years for a while.
Yeah. And my dad
Yeah.
actually played for the Niners for a
Oh,
season.
really?
Oh, wow.
That's
Yeah.
cool. That what position?
He backed up Joe Montana at quarterback.
No
Holy shit.
shit. No
Cool.
shit.
Threw a
Right on.
touchdown pass to Jerry Rice.
Oh, that's
So
amazing. That's so fucking cool.
yeah.
That's so cool.
Some nice dinner table fodder to just throw out there while you're passing the bowls.
Right. What? That's badass.
While we're on the topic of favorites, who is your favorite playwright?
Yeah, you sent me that question, and I had to look back at my bookshelves and be like, who is my favorite playwright? Because there's probably, though, as far as like solo theater goes, strangely, that's been a lot of the writing I've done in the last 10 years. Connor McPherson's early plays, he wrote three solo plays early in
Yeah.
his career, Saint Nicholas, The Good Thief, and Rum and Vodka.
Okay.
So his stuff has been super influential on me,
Yeah.
sort of how he deals with masculinity yeah, so, and I do love a good Martin McDonagh.
you can't dislike and then Madonna.
And then Sarah Rule and Will Eno are definitely like high on my list as
more,
well.
Yeah,
cool.
Yeah.
I think what we covered Sarah Rule in our first season,
first or second. Yeah. She's
and she was completely new to me, and I loved it. I loved her.
She's a trip.
Yeah. Who's your favorite actor? Who turns you on? Or actress. I don't mean to gender it.
No. I do love Michael Fassbender.
Mm-hmm.
It's like vintage De Niro, that run of Taxi Driver, Raging Bull, King of Comedy, Deer Hunter.
Yeah. It's pretty.
Was quite the run.
Yeah, right? No shit.
So, yeah.
Absolutely. I just rewatched Raging Bull, like, a month or two ago, maybe right after Fringe. It was just randomly coming on. I'm like, nah, I'll do it. And I'm like, God damn. Like, because he's become, in his older years, he's become a little bit of,
he's become a character.
A little character. So, yeah. And, you know, I mean, I didn't love The Irishman, but I still thought he did some good work in that. But
yeah,
nothing beats that run. Like
that run of four or five movies right there was so, I mean, the range that he showed was, was pretty impressive, I thought.
Absolutely.
Do you have a favorite play?
The play that has stuck with me lately in the past couple years most is Dana H by Lucas Nath.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm not familiar.
It world premiered at the Kirk Douglas. And it's now on Broadway.
Oh shit.
Okay. I gotta check that out.
It's a solo piece, and it's very, the conceit of it is very interesting, which I didn't know. I don't think, I'll just tell you for the sake of conversation.
Mm-hmm.
It's about his mother, and he did all these interviews with it. He had a friend of his do a bunch of interviews with his mom because he didn't want to do the interviews. He edited them later.
Uh-huh. Mm.
And the whole conceit of the show, which I didn't know going in, was there's just a chair on stage in a motel room set, and there's space for super titles above the stage, and the actress is sitting on stage, and a stagehand comes on and puts headphones on her, and I'm still like, what the fuck is going on?
Mm-hmm.
And the super titles come on, and it'll basically says something to the effect of something about those interviews being done, and then that this actress will lip sync the interviews.
Wow.
Whoa.
So the entire show, so she's just sitting in a chair dressed as the character, and she's got headphones in, and the audio is projected out to the audience of these edited interviews, and she lip syncs the whole thing.
Holy shit.
Wow.
And he still finds ways to play with, I was like, I know I've seen, I saw The Christians, his play that was at the Mark Taper Forum a few years back.
I remember The Christians, yeah.
And he still finds ways to play with the form. So I was like, it'll play with the form, which this play does. It's not just a straight up lip sync and that's it. You know, like by the end of the show, it's morphed into something else. And, but yeah, that play was, has definitely stuck with me.
That's cool.
I always love a play that turns things on its head. It's like, what? Yeah. I'm going to sit here and watch someone lip sync the whole time? But
and her story is insane. Her story is, she was a counselor who got taken hostage by a guy that she, this skinhead that she counseled.
And was taken
around these like different motels in Florida and like held hostage for years or something.
Oh my God.
Yeah, wow. It's a very impactful story and an even more impactful telling, I think. So, yeah.
All right.
Right on. Well, yeah, I'm checking it out. Checking it out.
Yeah.
And then Scott, you're up next, I think.
Am I?
Yeah.
Oh, what are your dream roles? Do you have any dream roles?
I've written a bunch of them.
That's it.
Nice.
Right?
That is a great answer.
Yeah, it really is. Like, yeah. Forge your own.
Written some and working on writing others. So it's mainly stuff that I've written and that I'm writing.
Nice work. Nice job.
Right on. That's cool.
All right. Do you have anything else coming up that you want to plug? Anything else you're working on that we can keep eyes out for?
To be honest, not really. It's not a very podcast-friendly answer.
That's okay.
Well, you're working on the film version of Tilt.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess that is something to keep an eye out for. We're deep in post-production and have been for a while. It's just slowed down for a number of different reasons. But yeah, working on finishing up. It's a 13-minute short film that's adapted from the play, from Tilt.
Cool.
Oh, right
but,
on.
But shrunk into miniature, so it's just me and one hostage. So one guy and one hostage in a dilapidated house.
Wow. That's
so
awesome.
Yeah, so that's coming up, and but otherwise, yeah, just kind of back to the well,
right?
Yeah. To write another dream role,
trying to.
Well, I'm looking forward to the next thing that we get to see at Fringe.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. You're a pleasure to watch, and fascinating artist. It's a pleasure to know you and talk to you.
Thanks. Yeah. Thanks so much for having me.
And thank you, everyone, for joining us for our Artist Spotlight bonus episode. So, everyone, please follow us on all the socials, and you can catch Ben on Instagram at B. Murowski.
Yes. Scott? Yes. Thank you, CJ. A big shout out to Ryan Thomas Johnson, who writes our theme song. Our theme song's better than your theme song. And Ryan also writes all of our stingers for our show, and we love him, and he's an amazing human being.
Yeah.
And other than that, please... rate, review, subscribe, comment, even if you got bad comments.
I want to read a bad comment on the show. Come on.
Yeah, come on, engage us. We've been called adolescent. That's as bad as it's gotten.
Whoever said that can go fuck themselves.
Right. again, thanks everybody for tuning in. Ben, thank you so much. It was a pleasure speaking with you, man. It really was.
Yeah, thanks again for having
me. Yeah.
Great to be here.
The theater. Theater. To be or not to be. Theater.